शिवम सद्वैतम सर्वदुःखं परिशनसहितं श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्रीराधा कृष्ण पादं सहागणा ललिता शिवशिखण्डितं च नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठा नमो महाबलिन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदाय ते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामनि गौरीश नमः पञ्चतत्त्वमकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्त्यावतार भक्त्यक्षं नमामि भक्तिशक्तिकम् हे कृष्ण कारुण सिंधु दीनबान्धु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपीक कंत धार कंत नमोस्तु ते जायतम सुदूरपांगोर मम मंदिर मतिर गति मत्सवश्व परम भोजो श्री राधा मदन मोहनो जिबिद बिदार निकल्प प्रुमाल श्रीमत् नागर सिंहासनस्तु श्रीमद् राज शील गोविंद देव प्रष्टादि भी सेदु मम स्मरणी श्रीमन् रासर सारंभी वंशी वतात तस्तता कर्षण भीनु स्मरणी गोपीर गोपीनाथ श्रेष्ठ नहा तप्त कंचन गौरांगे राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभान सुति देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिय जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्री श्री गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
गीता गीता चयेन विभक्ति भावेन चेतस वेदशस्त्र प्राणनीत नानीतनि सर्वशा पदोसु स्टडी द भगवद गीता एज इट इज विथ ग्रेट फेथ एंड डिवोशन द एसेंस ऑफ ऑल वेदिक नॉलेज इज रियल. So this evening we are reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, fourth chapter, which is entitled Transcendental Knowledge, text number 37. So the verse is here. And you can repeat after me line by line. Yataidang si samidognir.
Yataidang si samidognir.
Vasmasat kuru ter juna.
Vasmasat kuru ter juna.
Yanagni sarvakarmani.
Yanagni sarvakarmani.
Vasmasat kurute tata.
Vasmasat kurute tata.
Now we will learn what this means. Please repeat.
Yata.
Yata. Just as.
Just as.
Ithamsi.
Ithamsi.
Firewood.
Firewood.
Samitha.
Samitha.
Blazing.
Blazing.
Agni.
Agni.
Fire.
Fire.
Vasmasat.
Vasmasat.
Ashes.
Ashes.
Kurute.
Kurute.
Oh Arjuna, I'm sorry. Turns.
Turns.
Arjuna.
Arjuna.
Oh Arjuna.
Oh Arjuna.
Jnana Agni.
Jnana Agni.
The fire of knowledge.
Fire of knowledge.
Sarvakarmani.
Sarvakarmani.
All reactions to material activities.
All reactions to material activities.
Vasmasat.
Vasmasat.
To ashes.
Ashes.
Kurute.
Kurute.
It turns.
It turns.
Tata.
Tata.
Similarly.
Similarly.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
As a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. Purport. Perfect knowledge of self and super self and of their relationship is compared herein to fire. This fire not only burns up all reactions to impious activities, but also all reactions to pious activities, turning them to ashes. There are many stages of reaction. Reaction in the making, reaction fructifying, reaction already achieved, and reaction a priori. But knowledge of the constitutional position of the living entity burns everything to ashes. When one is in complete knowledge, all reactions, both a priori and a posteriori, are consumed. In the Vedas, Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22, it is stated, Ube uhaivasha ete torkyamrita sabh asadhuni. One overcomes both the pious and impious reactions. Again, this verse reads, Yataitangsi samidok nir bhasma sat kurutir juna. Janagni sarva karmani bhasma sat kuruti tata. And this means, as blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. Mukham kroti vachalam mangalanaya devinam kripitam mandya shri kumindinatavam. So, Srila Prabhupada's explanation begins with this sentence: perfect knowledge of the self and super self and of their relationship is compared herein to fire. So we will begin here. That there is a self, which is our own individual identity, known as Atma. Each one of us is one Atma, or one individual soul. And there is a super self, which is, of course, Krishna, ultimately. But Krishna has an expansion known as Paramatma. And he is depicted right here. This form of Krishna, you see, located within the atom. Also, the same form is located within our hearts. So he is the supreme form, supreme identity over all forms and identities in this universe. And what is the relationship between Atma and Paramatma? So that is that we can understand in terms of this body, which is a third important consideration here. So this body is described in Bhagavad Gita as yantra, means a machine. So let us consider a machine now. A commonplace machine nowadays, which probably many of you are familiar with, is a computer. How many people here have computers at home? Oh, not that many. Well, this is all the rage nowadays. Anyway, I think all of you are familiar with the computer anyway. You know what one looks like. So, a computer is constructed to perform certain kinds of work. There is, for instance, an aspect of the computer which is self-regulating. Those who know that in computers there's power management, so you don't use up so much of your battery. It automatically regulates, shuts off the screen or shuts off something else, shuts off the fan if there's a fan, so that you don't use up too much power. This is one thing, self-regulation. Then there's information processing. You type in some information and the computer will process it, give you a result. And so in this way, a computer is designed by who? By an architect, computer architect, a programmer, software programmer, a designer, in other words. He has thought in his brain what this computer should do, and he has arranged the machinery in such a way that it will do that. So now there's the user of the computer. So there's a rule: garbage in, garbage out. That's one of the rules of computing science. If the user puts garbage into the computer, in other words, if he puts false data into the computer, false information, it's not that the computer is going to make it right. The computer is going to give a result which is also false. So similarly, let's now compare the computer to the body. We have a body which is designed by the Supreme Person, Paramatma, Super Soul. And similarly, this body has aspects which are self-regulating, like the heart beats, without you having to do anything about it. Fortunately, we don't have to control our hearts. That would be quite a job. That would take your whole life energy. It was up to you to ensure that your heart would beat from moment to moment. That's all you would be doing, just sitting there, willing your heart to beat. Otherwise, you'd be dead. So we wouldn't really have, our life wouldn't very much amount to anything if that was our case. But the heart beats automatically. It is self-regulated. Similarly, the food digests without our attention. So many things in this body are working. Circulation of blood, respiration, the autonomic nervous system. So many vital systems are going on without our direct intervention. And other aspects of the body, they respond to our will. So, in this way, you can understand the body is very much like a machine, a sophisticated machine like a computer. Now, in the same rule, garbage in, garbage out, there are certain activities for which this body is designed to do. Lord Krishna has intended this human body to perform certain kinds of activities. And other kinds of activities, while you can do with this body, you're not supposed to do. So this is where we get the idea, mentioned in the purport, of sinful and pious activities. There is sin. Sin, again, these are the activities which we're not supposed to do in this body. And they will yield an undesirable result. They will increase our suffering in this world. The body is programmed to suffer and to enjoy. So if we perform sins, then we increase our stock of suffering. We'll have to suffer those reactions in this life and also in future lifetimes. And then there are other activities which are recommended for us to do. And they will increase piety. And proportionately, we will come into a situation of well-being, happiness, as a result, in this lifetime and in the next future lifetimes. So, sin and piety is defined in many, many scriptures. Basically, you find, although the descriptions of what is sinful and what is piety in some scriptures, there's more and there's less descriptions. But basically, everything is the same. Basically. There is in the Bible, for instance, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This is a pretty good formulation, pretty basic. If you cause pain to others, then you will attract pain to yourself. And if you do good things for others, then that activity will attract a good result to you. It's a very basic rule. But here we're reading something very interesting. Here Krishna is recommending that we should come to the position of transcendental knowledge. Knowledge of the self as spirit soul, the super self, Paramatma, and the relationship between the two, and thus transcend both pious and impious activities and their reactions. So it turns out that piety, or punya in Sanskrit, punya karma, and sinfulness, papa karma. It turns out that these are dualities. And Lord Krishna has earlier, already in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, discussed dualities at great length. Sukha dukkha, happiness, distress. Sukha dukkha, sama, Lord Krishna says. We should be the same. We should be equipoised. We should not be attracted to sukha, to material happiness, material enjoyment. Nor should we try to avoid dukkha, because then we become entrapped in the network of material affairs. This is what material affairs are all about. People are running after pleasure, sensual pleasure, mental pleasure, whatever it may be. But pleasure which is available here in this material existence. People, not just people, all living entities, they're running after pleasure and they're running away from pain. But as probably everyone here has had some experience of in their life, it turns out that pleasure and pain, one leads to the other. You see, in the pursuit of pleasure, we end up in a painful situation. And similarly, in the same way, sometimes pain turns to pleasure. So, this is the idea that everything in this material world is always shifting, always changing. And we are trapped in the midst of this machinery. So it is like the image of an ass, you know, this animal, donkey. It has a carrot to get an ass to work very nicely. They hang a carrot over its nose by a long stick, and they also beat it on the backside. And that way you can make a carrot, an ass, make an ass work very industriously. Because in the front, there's pleasure, the promise of pleasure. And in the back, there's a whip. And so this is how the ass works, and this is also how the human being works. This is how all living entities work. And that work is called karma. Chasing pleasure, avoiding pain. So even if one does this, as guided by certain scriptures, which in Vedic terminology are called karma kanda scriptures, which tell you what is sin, you should avoid that, and here are pious activities, like to be honest, to be truthful, to be charitable, to help others, and thus you'll go to heaven, you'll become wealthy, you'll become honored in society, you'll get so many advantages. And some people think that this is all there is to religion, or all there is to spiritual life. I've heard people tell me that they have gone to see such and such guru coming from India with a long beard, and just by seeing him they felt electricity. And then the next day, lo and behold, a lot of money came their way. It was miraculous. And then I knew that this guru is real. Because after seeing him, so much money came to me. So I've seen certain countries I have visited. They build shrines to such gurus. Everywhere, on the roadside, everywhere, they build shrines, and they make offerings. You always see candles burning. And if you ask these people, thinking one country, Malaysia, there's a lot of this, and you ask a Malaysian person, why you worship this guru, and they'll say, it brings money. So this is an example, sukha dukkha. We are interested in sense gratification and in avoiding pain. But this is material existence. This is not liberation. Liberation means to come to the platform of the soul, realizing that material sense gratification, material enjoyment, and material distress are just dualities. So, Lord Krishna says, when one comes to this knowledge, then all reactions are burned up. Now, there's a very interesting definition of sin from this point of view. An interesting definition of sin which also includes the so-called pious works. This comes from Sanskrit, santa. We have this word in English language, sin. We have a similar word, which is related to sundar, which means to separate. And these words come from a Sanskrit word, sanatar, which means to divide far away from. So sin is any activity which divides us from God, it divides us from Krishna. So even if you are performing so-called pious good works, if they divide us from Krishna, they are not connected to Krishna, then that is also sinful. So ultimately, to get free of sin, we have to connect with Krishna. We have to stop this division between our activities and Lord Krishna. And so, this is reconnection, or yoga, is accomplished by transcendental knowledge. And it says here that this transcendental knowledge burns up all stages of sinfulness. What does that mean? So, first of all, there's a stage called bija, or seed. Every one of us in the heart. The heart is the seat of the soul, and around the soul there are subtle layers of material consciousness. And within these layers of material consciousness upon which this body is resting, this body is situated on those subtle layers of consciousness. So within those layers of consciousness, there are so many bija or seeds of desire. Some of them we know about, some of them we don't know about. But these seeds in time, they all come to fruition. They all grow, just like in a garden. There's seeds, at the right season, the seeds will sprout. So, a very useful example of a material desire is sexual desire, to understand the whole cycle of stages. So, a child, a small child, does not have any overt sexual desire. That's why they say children are innocent. But still, the seed is there in the heart. The bija is there. And so at a certain stage, adolescence, when children reach 11 or 12 years old, then that seed sprouts into a state called kutastha, which means, yes, a little green shoot comes up. So at that age, suddenly the child, whether boy or girl, 11, 12, starts to feel some attraction to the opposite sex. May not even understand why, but there it is. So at this stage, one begins to feel the desire. And then the desire brings one in contact with the object of the desire. The boy comes to close association with the girl, girl into close association with the boy. This is the next stage called palonuka, which means the fruit, the object of my desire, is now before me. And that, of course, makes the desire so much more intense. And then finally, the last stage is parabdha. Parabdha is when we're actually enjoying or suffering that fruit. It's like, you know, you see the fruit, you become attracted to it, and then you pluck it and you eat it. So this act of eating the fruit, this is parabdha. So the fruit may be sweet, the fruit may be sour. You don't know till you bite into it. And in this human form of life anyway, generally it's a mixture, sweet and sour, everything. Every situation we get ourselves into, it's usually both. Because the human being, he's suspended between two worlds. A lower world of animal life, which is full of pain and suffering and darkness. And a higher world of heavenly life, where the demigods reign, which is full of light and happiness, but it is material happiness. And we're on the junction between animal life and the life of the devas, or demigods. You, from the human form of life, you can go either way. One can go up or one can go down. But actually, the human being is meant to go out. You can go up or down, but best thing is to go out. Get out of this. Up is sukha, material happiness. Down is dukkha. So in between here, in the human form, we experience both. Especially in these sexual relationships. There's always in the beginning anyway, usually, love at first sight and all that kind of stuff. There's happiness. But later on, very often, the relationship sours, becomes miserable, and then they have to separate. So, and ultimately, even if one is able to maintain a stable relationship with one person throughout one's whole life, that's what they call real love, still in time, the life will run out of this whole thing. Disease, old age, death comes and ends the whole business. And that is dukkha, that is suffering. So, this is the parabdha, enjoying and suffering the fruit, and then what is left after one eats a fruit? There's a seed, like a mango. You eat a mango, in the middle you'll find there's a big seed. So that goes back in the heart. And the whole thing will start again in a future lifetime. That same seed returns to the heart, will again grow, again there will be kutastha and palomukha and parabdha, again bija, the cycle of four goes on and on endlessly. So in this human form of life, by transcendental knowledge, we can break this process. By realizing that we are eternal spirit soul, therefore we have nothing to do. We have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of this body, this machine. We are different from this machine. And one can become perfectly established in this spiritual consciousness, the self-realization, by developing his relationship with the super self. Some people just try to realize the self without Krishna, without God. But then that realization is not stable. Why? Because the actual origin of our desires, the fundamental root of all of our desires, is the soul itself. We are spiritually persons, not impersons. It is not that our personality is just a kind of mask, and then you take it off and there's nothing. And there's just emptiness. Some people who are interested in yoga and meditation and mysticism, that is their conclusion. The personality is a kind of mask, and all we have to do is take it off, and then there's just emptiness, and you're all right. And because there's nothing to do, nothing to feel, nowhere to go, no relationships, and thus there'll be no unhappiness. How can you be unhappy if there's nothing at all? But the problem is, if there is nothing at all, you also won't be happy. And maybe you won't be unhappy, but you also won't be happy. And actually we desire fundamentally, in the core of our being spiritually, we desire happiness. We desire eternal happiness. Just examine your desires for a moment and you'll see that's what you want. Nobody wants to die. Nobody wants to grow old. Nobody wants to become wrinkled and sick. You see? We all like to be forever youthful. Why is that? If we were just matter, how could we desire like that? Because it is natural for material things to deteriorate in time. And similarly, this human body will deteriorate in time. Why do we try to arrest the process? Through, you know, medicine, or through facelifting, and all these kind of things that they do to try to stay young a little longer. Why? There is a fundamental person who is actually eternally youthful. Navayovana. Navayovana is the name of Krishna. Yes, he is eternal. As you've seen, a very beautiful youth. And he is that way eternally. And we are aspects of his own divine self. He is the super self, and we are the localized self, the individual self. So we share in his qualities. Therefore, sat, we are eternal. And similarly, no one likes to be in ignorance. No one likes to be a fool who is always being misled by wrong information, always getting tricked, always getting cheated. Nobody likes this. Therefore, naturally, we look for knowledge as a solution to our problems. Well, why do we do that? Because essentially, we are chit. We are full of knowledge, just as Krishna is. But now that knowledge is covered by the darkness of Maya, illusion. And finally, we all want to be happy. We want to be happy. Everyone is looking for happiness. Through drugs, through sex, through this, through that. And again, unfortunately, because these are material endeavors, they end up in unhappiness. We pursue the will-o'-the-wisp of happiness and end up in an even more suffering condition. But by knowledge, by transcendental knowledge, one comes to know that in my very nature, as spirit, I am full of happiness. As a spiritual person. So this spiritual personality can only be understood in relationship with the supreme spiritual personality. It's only then that personality has meaning. Now, there are spiritualists who are impersonal. They're not interested in realizing Krishna. They want to realize God as a light, as impersonal Brahman, Ramajyoti, the spiritual light. Yes, so they have no need, they have no access to the Supreme Person and to their own personal self. They simply want to merge into light. So that is also there, that realization. That is the impersonal aspect of Krishna. But we actually will not be happy until we realize ourselves as persons. And that is only possible in the relationship with the Supreme Person. Because that is the only sense of spiritual personality. To have a relationship. If you're a person, you must have a relationship with other persons. So we can have a relationship with all other persons, all other souls, through Krishna, the Supreme Soul. And that is possible by transcendental knowledge. So, knowledge. When we speak of knowledge, there's content of knowledge, but there's also method of knowledge. It's not enough just to know this, like content, you know, an idea, a concept. But we have to know how, we have to know the method to realize this. And so this is the method of yoga that we practice here in this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Bhakti Yoga. It's very simple, as we were doing a few moments ago, by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This very sound, which is actually Krishna himself, another form of the Supreme Person, this very sound brings us into direct personal association with the Supreme Person. And the consciousness being washed clean by this sound then can perceive itself as Eternal Person and the Supreme Eternal Person, Krishna, and understand the relationship, the connection, the yoga between both. And in that state of pure consciousness, there is an exchange of love, exchange of divine love, prema, prema bhakti. So this love is the nectar, and the sweetness, the rasa, for which we are always anxious in this world. In everything we do, we look for taste. Everything we do in life is impelled by a search for taste. The clothes we wear, why do we wear certain clothes? Because we have a taste for this. We're trying to experience some sense of fulfillment by the way we dress, the way we wear our hair, the kind of music we listen to, what we like, the films we like to watch, the books we like to read, the work we take up, the career we try to pursue. Everything in life is impelled ultimately. What is the ultimate factor? It is taste. Things we don't like, we avoid. We try to avoid. So there is an ultimate taste. And that is the taste, rasa vaisaha, says in the Upanishads. He, God, Krishna, he is that rasa, he is that taste that we are searching for. Unfortunately, as long as we search for that taste within the realm of the senses, material senses and mind, we can never have it. You just get a little a little touch of something, but then immediately disappointment follows. Disappointment is mixed up with it. Now, Prabhupada, our spiritual master, gave the analogy of sweet rice mixed with sand. Very often on the Sunday feast, sweet rice is served. It's a very tasty preparation, popular in India. Cooked rice, cooked in milk, so it becomes thick and there's lots of sugar inside. So very, very good. But if you take that sweet rice and lace it with sand, then you will also still taste the sweetness. It will be there, but it will be very disappointing. Because the sand makes it unpalatable. So similarly, in all of our affairs in this world, we are looking for rasa, for sweetness. But it is mixed with sand. And thus we are always disappointed. But if we come to the stage of transcendental knowledge, then that disappointment evaporates. And then there's only sweetness, the sweetness of our loving link with Krishna. And that sweetness, like we said, Lord Krishna is Nava Yovana, ever youthful. He also has another name, Nava Nava Rasa, newer and newer rasa. It's not like the material rasa, when you gorge yourself on it and then it becomes distasteful. You can only eat so much sweet things and then you become sick of it. Even if you have what is called a so-called sweet tooth, you can only eat so much. If we could give from the restaurant all the sweets you want and eat, but at some point you can't take any more. You reach a limit. So that limit, that is called Maya. Maya means that which limits us. That's one definition of the word Maya, that which limits us. So all material happiness is limited. But spiritual happiness, transcendental happiness, Krishna conscious happiness is unlimited. And how can I say such a thing? What is the proof? The proof you can all discover for yourself. Again, in this chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If you take this up as a practice, if you make this your habit to chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then you will never reach the end of the flavor, the sweetness that you unlock by chanting this mantra. Especially it is enhanced as we take up the sadhana, the regulation of bhakti yoga. There are certain activities which hinder the taste of the holy name. For instance, kind of activities that materialists engage in order to enjoy their senses, like meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication. These kinds of activities. So they bind our consciousness very, very strongly to the body. They bring the consciousness down. So if we can free ourselves, if we can break those habits, those are bad habits, and accept the good habit of chanting Hare Krishna, then you will realize very, very intensely the unlimited sweetness of this holy name. And this sweetness becomes, it is compared, it starts off like a sugar, water, mixed water, or actually what is squeezed from sugar canes. Sugar comes from a cane, and when it is squeezed in a machine, it comes out as a kind of juice, sugar juice. They take that sugar juice in India and they cook it down, and it becomes syrup. And then it becomes molasses. And then it becomes a kind of crystal, kind of raw crystal. And then finally, after refinement, it becomes rock candy. So, like that, as we continue to chant, the holy name becomes sweeter and sweeter and sweeter until it reaches the point of full realization of the Supreme Person, Krishna. One understands that the Lord and His name are not different. So that is our humble invitation on behalf of the founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, that you all kindly take up chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and make this your habit. And enjoy. And that's what everyone wants, to enjoy. This is the real enjoyment. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Are there any questions right now? Yeah?
I was about Radha. She is very intimately connected to Krishna.
Well, you do that when you chant Hare Krishna, because Hare is addressing her. Hare or Hara is referring to Krishna's energy. So His Adya Shakti, his original energy, is Radharani, Srimati Radharani. And you can only approach Krishna through his energy. So actually Radha is even more important than Krishna. In this sense, just like you see, you have these big companies, like there's this one company in Scandinavia, Bang and Olufsen, I see. So I take it because the name of Mr. Bang is first, that he's more important than Mr. Olufsen. So when we say Hare Krishna, we say Hare first. Because you can't, it's like the sun. The sun is like Krishna, but the light is like Radha, his energy. So if there was no light, you could not see the sun. So without Radha, we cannot approach Krishna. So therefore, we have to address Hare first. And then Rama means the happiness. Rama, Ramayate, enjoyment, the pleasure, which is shared between the two. So these are the significances of these three names, Hare, Krishna, and Rama. Hare is Radharani, Krishna is, of course, Krishna, and Rama is the bliss that is shared between the two. Sometimes it is said Rama refers to Balaram, that is also true. Different ways of understanding this. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada. Shri Prabhupada. Shri Prabhupada.